welcome to our Biz Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Cuthbert, Creative Director at Baker Creative.
If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it.
Monica Day is the co-anchor for NBC4 Today. She joined WCMH, the network's affiliate in Columbus, Ohio, in 2006. She was crowned Miss Ohio USA in 2008 and chosen for the Columbus Business First newspaper's 40 Under 40 accolade in 2020. Recognized as a community champion, Monica was inducted into the Whitehall Yearling High School Hall of Fame. She now hosts a new feature, Mom Boss, profiling local mothers, balancing their roles as business leaders and mothers. Welcome, Monica.
Great to have you on our podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I know you have a very diverse background, and I was really curious to kind of share with our viewers, you know, your background includes connections with the restaurant industry, competing in pageants. How did those experiences shape your life?
In a lot of ways, you know, I grew up in the restaurant business. My grandparents were restaurateurs, and I was always in their restaurants. And so I, at a very young age, got to meet a diverse group of people, I would say. You know, my grandfather owned the top steakhouse in Bexley. And he owned a French restaurant in the 80s called the Cafe Martinique, which was across the street. He owned the Kahiki, but sold that before I was born. And so I spent a lot of time in the top and in the cafe. And it introduced me to a really, like I said, diverse group of people, whether that be different political affiliations, different financial groups, you know, different people from different, I don't want to say classes, but, you know, very wealthy people, working class people. There was also a lot of diversity within the staff. So at a time where I was really kind of growing up and forming those life experiences, I was around, you know, Black people, Hispanic people, you know, Latinos. I was around people in the LGBTQ group without ever having to think about it. Those were just the people that were in my life. And so being around different people became very normal for me. You know, the chef at the top, his daughter and I were best friends growing up. And, you know, he was Black. And his wife was white. So being young with a best friend who was biracial, I never knew that that wasn't just like everybody's best friend was biracial or my best friend's dad is Black. Like that wasn't strange, you know, to me, where once I started getting older and especially now you meet people who don't have any Black friends or they never grew up around Black people. And so it's those kind of relationships that really kind of shaped the relationships that I have now. There was a woman who was a singer at one of the piano bars who was a transgender woman. And I remember as a kid just thinking, you know, that this woman, Mona, was so glamorous, you know, and so beautiful. And now, you know, that I'm an adult, I know that, you know, she was a transgender woman in the 80s, which was not that common. And so when I'm around people, you know, and we had servers and maitre d's and patrons who were gay and who were out. And a lot of people at that time were still kind of hiding that. And so that gave me some really great opportunities to relate to a lot of different people. You know, older people, I was around my grandparents a lot and I was around their friends a lot. And so that kind of formed the way that I communicate. I feel comfortable, you know, talking to different generations about different topics. And they had some real characters that were in there, in those restaurants and in those bars. And so that, and that was great. And I grew up, I continued to work in the restaurant industry and worked with some really great people and, just different people, a lot of artsy people, you know, a lot of artsy people end up being in restaurants. And so that's been, you know, fantastic for me over the years. And then, you know, a lot of people that, that I worked with, came here from Mexico. And so, you know, like I heard so many stories of people who were coming here for a better life, you know, and the hardest working people that you'll ever meet in your life, you know, and we're here in America and we're so thankful to be here because they were, providing an opportunity, not only for themselves, but for their families, as well. So I'm thankful for that time. And, you know, it's the same thing with pageants. You meet so many different people in doing that, and you just kind of gain a confidence from being around so many different gifted individuals. And so both of those things have given me a lot of skills that have helped me to relate to a broader audience and to a broader group of people.
I totally understand what you're saying. My, you know, when you grow up around it, you don't really even recognize it. It's just,
yeah,
this is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's totally true. And I, with my mom being from Madrid, I mean, she's one of the most patriotic people I've ever met in my whole life, because exactly. She understands what's here, and mm-hmm. she doesn't take any of it for granted. And we're brought up that way.
And I think too, when you're around people who aren't trying to like label or hold anybody back, mm-hmm. You don't label yourself. You don't put restrictions on yourself. You see what any individual is able to accomplish, and you just go for whatever you feel like you want to try or what you want to do. So it really kind of, I think, emboldened me to be in those kind of settings as well.
So that being said, you know, seeing examples of that every day, was that kind of like an inspiration to try the news, try to be on TV, try to explore that?
So I wanted to be president. that was my number one. When I was a kid, Ronald Reagan was president, and I was like, hey, he's an actor who became president. I think I'll just do that. I'll just do that. That's obviously what I'll do. That must be easy. So as a kid, I thought I'm going to be president. I'll probably be an actress first. And then if that doesn't work out, I'll own restaurants. So those were my goals. I never thought I want to be Walter Cronkite. Like I was never, you know, trying to be on the Today Show. Like that wasn't the goal. I will take that job now. Those are good paychecks. But my love was really in theater and the arts. And so my getting into television really was kind of a different path than most people. I had done TV productions in high school, mm-hmm. and that was it. And I got the job at the TV station through an audition to fill in part-time temporarily as a traffic reporter until they found the right replacement. Mm-hmm. And so I was told this will never be a full-time job. You know, and so at the time I was working for Buca di Beppo restaurants, I was doing marketing and event planning for them. And in that time, in my mind, I was learning as much as I could about the restaurant industry outside of my grandparents' restaurants to try to open my own restaurant someday, you know? And so that was like what I was doing there, at Buca, and it was a good job. It was a good, starting out position. And I still had that desire to do theater. So I was also working with a local talent agency. I was working with Cam Talent and doing like commercial work. And they said, yeah, we've got this audition for you to be a traffic reporter. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and they said, it's Monday through Friday. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a long shoot. They're like, no, it's a job. You would be a traffic reporter. It's a Monday through Friday job. I was like, well, I have a job. What, like, how does it work? They're like, well, it's from 5 a.m. And I was like, what time? It's like 5 a.m. So I did the traffic reporting part-time from 5 a.m. until I think I left at like 9. And then I went straight to the restaurant and did my day job for probably 6 months or so. And while I was still part-time and temporary, and then that job, the TV job, became my full-time job.
So what kind of restaurant would you have opened if you did open one?
Great question. My grandparents had the Top Steakhouse. And so there's always a part of me that loves the idea of a steakhouse, but I'm also like very fond of tapas. So perhaps some kind of tapas restaurant. Very farm to table. I was into farm to table before it was popular. Mm-hmm. And then when that really started to take off here in Columbus, you know, I just loved, you know, to see that idea, but that kind of concept would be something that would interest me. Who knows, down the road, maybe that'll happen for me.
Maybe there'll be steak tapas.
Right. Why not?
Yeah, right. And you have kid meals on the side.
Yeah. If I opened something now, it would be very kid centric. The me that wanted to open a restaurant, you know, 16 years ago is very different than the me that would be opening something now. Because now when I think about it, it's like a breakfast place that has a big outdoor area that you can wait in with your kids and let them like run off steam while you have a Bloody Mary and then go in and get like a quick meal and out the door. So it's very, very different what I would have done then versus what I would do now.
So saying that, if you had talked to your former self 16 years ago, what kind of advice would you give yourself?
I've been asked this before. First off, put on more sunscreen, because later.
How has being a parent influenced your job today?
It's changed a lot for me. I talked a little bit about burnout. And there was a time where I was like, yes, I can do every event. Yes, I can work the extra hours. Yes, I can do all of these stories. I'll just, you know, stay at work for 12 hours and then I'll go do this event. And why not? You know, I'm young enough and I'll just keep going. And once you have kids, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that. And so having children has made me slow down. And I think that's a good thing. When you're moving at that pace, you start to resent what you do. And I love what I do. Mm-hmm. So they have helped me kind of reset the things that I loved about television that made me want to stick with it and move away from everything else that I'd always done. They've influenced me to try to be a better person. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, I also try to seek out, and I've always done this, I've tried to find stories that are uplifting. You know, I look for the stories that make people smile, but I think that they've made me desire that even more, mm-hmm. you know, to bring those stories of people in the community that are doing good, because sometimes the world can be a scary place for a child. If you just look at, you know, some of the headlines that are out there, it's terrifying. So I think it's important that we have those stories and that we highlight people that are doing good things so that we know it. And then our kids know it too. So those are a few big ways that they've definitely kind of influenced what I do and how I do it.
So how did you go from that concept to highlighting, you know, working women?
So I had wanted to do this for a while. I was kicking around a few ideas of how to highlight just women in general. And I talked to a friend of mine who's in PR about the idea. And I was like, you know, what do you think of this? And we talked to another mutual friend about it. And then I kind of put it on the back burner. I had a lot of other things going on. And probably a year later, she was like, hey, remember we talked about this? What if you did this? And then I took that idea and kind of played with it. And Mom Boss was really kind of born from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a series that we've been doing for about a year. That's probably going to evolve a little bit in the coming months as well. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important that we talk to women who are doing it all so that we know that no one's really doing it all.
When you're out there and, you know, we're trying to get your positioned in the media, how did you overcome the beauty queen stereotype?
I don't know if I ever have, to be honest with you. So I had competed in pageants and got the job at the TV station. So I was already at the station. And I was done competing in my mind. And it came around to my last year of eligibility. And I thought, I might want to do it again. And there was a girl at the station who, she and I were the same age, and television was her dream. She had gone to school for it. She was following her dream to be in TV. And she had competed in the Miss Indiana system. Yeah. And she and I had talked about doing one more year. We both had one more year of eligibility, you know, when we talked about it. And she was in a car accident and she ended up dying. And
I'm sorry.
It shook everybody at the station, but it also really made me think about not pushing that aside because of what people might think, or if I didn't win, or how that would look, and just going for it. And what was funny is some of the judges the year that I won Miss Ohio came from Indiana. Oh. And it's like, I'm like, but it was just like, you know, it was like the universe said, go do this.
Aww.
And so, you know, I was happy that I did. And people, and then afterwards, people assumed that I got the job because I was Miss Ohio. No, I probably didn't get fired from the job because I was Miss Ohio.
Oh.
That time where it was like, this isn't a permanent job, you know? Yeah. And my news director at the time, he was even kind of like, you've ruined your career, you know, like what career you might have. And then I thought, what are you going to do? Fire Miss Ohio? So I kind of, it gave me an opportunity to kind of shed some of the angst that I had. Like, I didn't want to make any mistake. I was making a lot of mistakes. And then I would internalize the mistakes thinking, oh my God, they're going to fire me. They're going to, this is going to be the end for me. You know, oh, this mistake is going to be the end for me. Mm-hmm. And it kind of helped me to have a little more confidence in that, no, they're not. And so once I had a little more confidence in the fact that I wasn't going to get fired over something stupid, I got more and more comfortable. And the more comfortable I got, the better I was at what I was doing. Lo and behold, you know, confidence really helps you through it. And so I obviously didn't get fired, and the title didn't ruin my career.
Awesome.
So I kind of, you know, I embrace it.
Well, I think, you know, there's so much pressure to be perfect, right? You have to be the perfect mom,
yeah,
perfect wife, and perfect on TV, and a perfect at the beauty queen. And oh my God, that's a lot to take on, you know?
It's a lot. It was hard. Losing at Miss USA was extremely difficult for me. Not making the top 15 was extremely difficult for me. Like, it was because there were so many things that I didn't do that I knew that I should have done. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't stand up for myself in certain ways. I let things that people said influence choices that I made that I shouldn't have made. And so I suddenly had all these regrets, mm-hmm, and they were eating at me. And from that, I really started to change my mindset in a lot of ways, that I was not going to let everyone else cause me to have regrets that were affecting me so deeply, mm-hmm, that I was not going to listen to what everyone else had to say about things that I knew I should be doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a blessing in losing that pageant, because had I won, would I have gone on letting everyone else dictate my life? And would I have been happy in that? Would it then have just been an empty victory that I would then have a new life path,
mm-hmm,
full of these moments where I may or may not be filled with regret again? And I won Miss Congeniality. So, you know, I wasn't the prettiest, but I was the nicest. So I think that's something. And I mean, you know, so I came away with something.
Yeah, well, I think that's, I agree with all of it. Yeah, no, I agree with that. But, you know, when you're on the media, sometimes social can be kind of rough. So how do you deal with being in the public eye to handle viewer comments and not let it get to you? Sometimes they're not always so kind. They don't know the story.
No, they're nasty. People are nasty. People are like on their computers, They've never met you. They say awful things to you and about you because they're miserable people. It really comes down to the fact that the people that are the nastiest have the nastiest lives. And I feel sorry for them. Mm-hmm. It's taken me a long time to get there. I still get mad. I still Google them so that I can look at them and judge them. But like, you have to let that go. I mean, I can't, this is kind of funny. So there was a guy that was messaging me a lot, nasty messages. And he was messaging like some other people that worked at the station, nasty things. And we were trying to like block him. At sometimes we would respond, sometimes we wouldn't. Like, it was just this long thing, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then I found out where he worked, and we had a mutual friend, and this mutual friend told him to knock it off. Okay.
Okay.
But he worked at a public place, a place where many people happen to be. And so one day when I happened to be there with a group of friends, I sought him out, and he was in a position where you might take a photo with him if you were at this event. And so I did. We all said, hey, can we get a picture with you? And he said, yes. And then he turned around and we were face to face. And I said, hi. He turned all kinds of red. We stood there and had a conversation. We hugged and it was over. And he said, I'm sorry. And I was like, it's totally fine. We can be best friends now. And I don't know why he felt the need to say the things that he was saying. I don't think he knew why he felt the need to say the things that he was saying. But it all ended with, you know, the two of us like taking a picture together and laughing it off. I think a lot of things in life could end that way if we could only just put aside our pride and our egos and whatever other baggage that we're carrying with us. Mm-hmm. Not that everyone should go seek out the trolls online, but it was a funny opportunity to, you know, to be like, dude, come on, why, you know?
Right.
And we had a lot of common ground. That's the funny thing. A lot of times the people that you despise and that, you know, you send these nasty messages to, in reality, you have a lot in common. And if you would just like stop the judgment and get to know a person, you might find that out.
That's a good legacy for your children.
Yeah, I hope.
No, I think so. I mean, that's huge. I do.
It's hard to do, but I think it's important to do. My pastor at church recently was talking about just carrying around bitterness and like, be careful what you carry with you.
Yeah.
What an incredible statement. Be careful what you choose to carry with you. It can shape your life. There's a lot of things that we just need to let go of in general. Just let go.
Yeah. And how do you let go? Do you go get a massage? You just say, I'm just done with it. Or is there something that you meditate or any tips on that?
I mean, I have no time to go get a pedicure. So forget meditating or like getting a massage. I've been trying to get a pedicure for like 4 months now. I just kind of like, I'm one of those people who goes from like 0 to 60 anger. Like I blow a fuse and then it's over.
Gotcha.
Like my blood pressure is never high because I'm just like, if something upsets me, I let it upset me and then I'm done.
Yeah. Understood.
There's nothing I can do. And the things that I do let seep in, like the Miss USA pageant, like that circumstance, it ate at me for so long, you know, and it took me a long time to pull a lesson out of that and then set the rest aside. And it's still, you know, there are some things that still make me tense and then I just have to take a breath and let them go.
Yeah.
There's no reason to hold on to those things, you know? And a lot of stuff, it turns into a joke because it, you know, it's funny. If I wrote down the amount of ways that people call me fat, I could write a whole book on this is how you call me fat. And it's like very creative. And I think some of these people think they're being nice, but in reality, they're just calling me fat.
I'm telling you, there's nothing fat about you. I am telling you flat.
I had a man message me the other day and tell me, and the message, I honest to God think it's like a 90-year-old man who's very trying to be nice. Okay. Oh. And he's like, I love watching you. I love how much you like food. It's obvious you love good food, you know, like stuff like that.
Oh, dude.
And I'm like, okay.
Not helping. Not
helping. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
You're like, this sucks. What the hell?
I had another guy message me during the pandemic and he was like, have you been eating too many cheeseburgers? Take a look in the mirror. I was 5 months pregnant.
Oh my God. So
I watch you every all the time, but you've really let yourself go. And then I messaged him back and I was like, well, I'm 5 months pregnant. So maybe you're the one that should take a look in the mirror. And then he messages back. He's like, I'm so sorry. Like apologizing all over himself. I'm like, whatever.
Wow. Again, people don't know the narrative behind the scene as always.
They don't. They don't. And also, even if I wasn't pregnant, don't be a jerk.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah. So when it's all said and done, what kind of legacy would you like to leave when people think of, you know, your work and you in general?
I mean, I hope people think that I've left behind a legacy of joy. I hope that I make people happy. You know, whether it's through acting or through television or through restaurants or making a meal, you know, I like to make people feel good. Mm-hmm. My love language is bringing other people joy and laughter. And so I hope that that's the legacy that I leave behind. I'm not always like the world's kindest person. You know, I'm not some saint walking around, you know, shooting sunshine at every scenario. I hope people though feel like I'm a good person. I hope that I've helped my children to be good people, you know, to have empathy. I hope that people think of me in that way. That's probably the greatest compliment I get from people when they talk about how empathetic I am. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people realize too, that you can change and you can seek forgiveness and you can make mistakes and you can be human and that's okay. Like that's one of the things that I want my kids to see. You're not always going to get it right. It's how you respond when you get it wrong and how you respond when someone has wronged you. Are you able to forgive? Are you able to laugh it off? Or do you hold that inside? Don't hold that inside. And so I hope that my legacy is full of love and laughter and humanity.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a great legacy. You can't ask for better than that.
No, you really can't.
So my last question is, what's the biggest mistake you see other business women leaders make? You interview a lot of them. What do you see?
I do. I think the biggest mistake is there are a few things that I personally feel women do. And it's just in general. Women a lot of times, I feel like are so focused on breaking a glass ceiling or how can I become this, you know, juggernaut? And those are great things. But instead of worrying about how do I overcome being a woman in those instances, like, don't think of it like I have to, it's a handicap. Like I'm a woman, so I have to overcome, you know, I have to overcome this. Be a woman, like be okay being a woman. There's nothing wrong with that. Do you maybe have to work harder? Maybe. Do you, you know, maybe have to push harder? Probably. But just do it. Just go for what you want and don't worry about I'm a woman. Who cares? Like, oh, you do this like a girl. Okay, great. You know, like don't get caught up in that. And then a lot of women, and I don't know about the generation, the younger generations, they may not, but I know a lot of people my age do this thing where they're like afraid to ask for what they think they deserve. Ask for it. What are they going to say? No. Okay. You ask for it and tell them why. If you think you deserve something, go for it and don't wait to be recognized. Say what you need, say what you want, you know, take the chance. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And sometimes you got to be ready to walk. If you're in a job and they're taking advantage of you and you know that you should be making more and they say no, it's time to move on. There are other opportunities out there. I think sometimes we get comfortable or we get in our heads about, well, you know, I've got kids. You know, I should be happy with what I have. The hell with that. Go for what you really want. And don't let your family, don't let your obligations hold you back. You know, those are the things that are going to push you forward. Those are your kids and your family and having a future for them is going to be a driving force for you. So if anything, that's going to give you more motivation and it's going to make you more efficient because you know you only have so many hours to get things done and you can't put it off to next Tuesday because there's a good chance that one of those kids are going to be like throwing up or coughing or have a fever and they can't go to daycare. So you got to get it done now. So like my big thing for women is just let go of all the stuff that's holding you back and just go for it.
No, I totally agree. And I know that money isn't always the driver why people stay. There are a benefit right. and other things, but yeah, notoriously women do kind of hold back.
Yeah. And even just like in negotiating a contract, don't start below where you should start because then you're always going to be fighting to get to where you should be. I did that. I did that at the TV station when I first started, you know, because it was like a position that I was never supposed to have. I signed my first contract knowing that I was not getting what I should be getting. And I'm not saying that like a male would have gotten more. I don't know, you know, TV industry, you're trying to get your first job. Mm-hmm. But it took me years to then overcome that where I started, because now I'm at this level and they're only going to take me up certain amount of levels. Now I'm in a position where that's, you know, that's not the case. But for those first few years, I had to really fight. I had to fight to get to where I should have been from the beginning. So I think that's important too. Don't start out so low that you're just digging out of a hole for the first half of your career.
Yeah, no, that's very difficult to do. Thank you so much for all your insight. And I know a lot of people are going to get a lot of great advice out of this. And thank you so much for your time.
If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it, and feel free to post any questions so we can be inspired by new content. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in learning more, visit our website at bakercreative.co.